Join us on Hat of Many Things as we discuss why sports ball is so great.
So, well, on to something that's a bit more fast-paced then, but also involves balls being hit with something. Balls with rackets or tennis.
Lots of grunting.
Oh, yes, lots of grunting. Sometimes off-putting grunting. In fact, I think...
Oh, never off-putting.
Well, I think I think that's been argued, hasn't it? Because I think Sharapova was very famous for doing it, and people were saying it's off-putting. We're not used to this.
Oh, it disturbs us from our strawberries and cream. Yeah.
But speaking as someone who lives just down the road from Wimbledon, tennis is... I quite like tennis. My favourite time watching tennis was actually when I was in Manchester, when the one year that they had like the 3D version on BBC, which really added something to watching it live. But I mean, often on the 2D, if you're not watching it live, it's hard sometimes to see why some of the decisions are made. And that's why they have, I forgot what it's called, the Eagle Eye or something.
Is it like Hawkeye?
Hawkeye, that's it. Yeah. The Hawkeye thing that shows you what happened. Well, you don't need that if you're watching it in 3D, because you can actually, you've got enough depth perception to work out what's happened most of the time, which was quite interesting.
I think it would be a great hybrid sport. Tennis dodgeball. I'd love to see two teams of 10 people just fucking belt each other with tennis balls. That'd be great.
Is it all about contact with you? Because, I mean, yes. Okay, you've got to have some sort of physical violence involved.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I watch rugby. I watch rugby and I watch MMA. Those are the sports
so
I watch.
So you know what you sound like at the moment, Mike, is basically one of the fans from the 80s that would go watch that soccer ball that you love so much just so you can have a little bit of contact at the end of it.
Nah, that's too uncouth. That's too uncivilized.
So you're like civilized.
There need to be some rules. There needs to be some respect.
I honestly never thought I would hear UFC classed as civilized violence.
Well, it is whenever Conor McGregor's not at a press conference. But we'll get on to that after balls with rackets. I actually quite enjoy watching tennis. It can go on quite a bit, but there's always something happening. It's quite a dynamic game.
Yeah, and I think it's another one of these things that kind of brings people together because we host Wimbledon. I think that's something that appears. We've got something later on about it being the calendar for your life. Wimbledon is one of those few things, like the Six Nations, where I will do my best to try and watch a fair portion of it. I mean, I can't watch all of it because it's on during the day on a work day, but it's kind of interesting to watch.
And unlike cricket, you actually have to watch it to keep track. Whereas cricket, you just listen out every half an hour. You're like, oh, something happened, boys. Really, what? Was it interesting? No.
Not necessarily. You could just be a gambling degenerate like myself and just follow tennis because it serves to have a great need to deal my gambling addiction.
See, if I was going to do that, I'd bet on esports.
Yeah, but you've got to vary it up every now and again just to keep your interest going.
That was dangerous to find out, by the way, that Sky do take bets on.
Sky, you could also take bets on what type of footwear Maroon 5 wore at the Super Bowl party. You could get 250-1 for him to be wearing Crocs. It's the greatest bet.
To be honest, that seems like a bit of a rigged set of odds. That should be far lower.
But no, sorry, I do digress.
As I say, the only bet I've ever made was when they did a deal on voting on the general election. And I made money by voting both on Theresa May and Corbyn in the last general election. And I made money on both those bets because it was Theresa May would survive the election. And I think that Corbyn wouldn't become prime minister or something like that.
Yeah, no, the first bet I ever made was on Alex Cuthbert to be the top try scorer in a Six Nations where Wales went in with lots of injuries, and I expected him to come second, but I expected him to be top try scorer. In the final game, they not only stole the Grand Slam, but the Six Nations from England in Twickenham, and Alex Cuthbert scored two tries to put him at the top of the leaderboard, and I won £220, and that was a fucking
but
great
have you
day.
Won a World Cup, mate?
I won £220, so I'll take it.
We've won a World Cup. Just in case you didn't know.
That was at Sheffield Nationals as well. Though.
Nice.
First thing I did was ring mine.
Oh.
Same thing we did when we knocked England out of their home World Cup. some angry punter outside the pub was like, dude, do you mind? Pack it in. I'm like, I'm ringing my mum. He's like, I don't care. I'm like, I don't care how angry you are. Pipe down. Enjoy your pipe.
Does anyone have anything in particular to say about tennis while we're here?
I mean, I've posted something in the chat, and that will be my one sort of... If I was trying to sell tennis to anyone, I would show them this clip of Andy Murray winning Wimbledon in 2013. And the
That's the guy who's Scottish when he loses and British when he wins.
Correct, right? Exactly.
He was British in 2013.
Yeah. I'd followed Andy Murray for years before that, and he was always the nearly man, the choker. Everybody has sort of written him off.
You mean he was Tim Henman?
Well, yeah, we thought he was. We thought he might be the nearly guy. And to see him finally overcome his demons to get the big monkey off the shoulder that had been on British tennis for the past 70 years was incredible. And the clip that I've shared of that last game, he had 3 match points and was brought back to deuce. And then that deuce goes back and forth for 6 minutes, and it's incredible tennis. It's not just a physical feat, it's the mental strength to get through that, to keep telling yourself that you can do it, even when, you know, so many times in the past he'd lost 7 Grand Slam finals in a row or something bizarre like that. He was, you know, he was the man who everybody expected to lose, and he overcame it, and the relief and the joy is palpable in that moment. So I just think tennis is a unique sport in the fact that it's very much a mental game as well as a physical game, and I think that clip just encapsulates it all.
I think all sports are mental games. I think the difference is tennis is a one-on-one game, whereas most sports are team-oriented.
Yeah, precisely.
So the pressure is more on one individual.
There's nowhere to hide.
Yeah, no, sorry. I think personally what piqued my interest was probably something that would be more akin to a cricket match rather than a tennis match. But the 2010 match between Isner and Mahu, even though it was just a first round Wimbledon match, for it to go on as long as it did and really gauge a lot of interest from people that should have been watching second and third round matches, being played on such a small court with as many people round to gather round just to see exactly what was going on and to really understand it. I remember that particular year just following it more with more interest than anything else and generally being gutted but also completely understanding when John Isner gets comprehensively beaten in the following round because he's pretty much just played 4 games of tennis, a lot more than that, within the space of one particular game. And I think it's that one-on-one mental battle was more on the line there than anything else you could put into an individual sport.
I think that's something that's interesting, and I know it's not entirely unique to tennis, but because it is one person, like you have the problem in, say, the Football World Cup, where if a team, you know, that there might be, if they've had their first round, they get through, but because of how the timings work out, they haven't had quite as long to rest as another team, so maybe one of their best players has to sit a game out or something like that because they're hoping they'll be available for a later round. Whereas in tennis, you really have that. If you have you can have an amazing, grueling game, but that might just knock you out then because you have to be on the court next day in the next round. And you're just one person.
Yeah, I mean, I've never actively chosen to put the tennis on or to sit in front of the screen watching tennis, but I do remember being at my grandparents' a lot when I was younger and they would have it on, and it's something that I could involve myself in and enjoy. It's something I can enjoy if it's on in a room or in the background, in a way that I can with some sports and can't with some sports. I think for me, it is the dynamism aspect. It's the fact that there is always something happening in tennis. There is always something happening in rugby. I often feel like in football and cricket, nothing's happening and I lose interest and I'm distracted and I want to go do something else. And I think that's maybe what I need, is I need something that is something that's going to draw my attention to the field and keep my attention on the field. Because if the game isn't interesting enough to keep me watching it, then I'm not going to watch it. I consume them actively rather than passively. You know, I'm analysing, I'm getting excited, I'm getting involved, and I can't do that with a game that takes 5 days. I don't think anyone can really be actively involved all day, all 5 days. You're busy doing other things, and it's just happening around you. Does that make sense?
I think the one-on-one battles can certainly show in cricket as well. Obviously, the fact that you're having to stand around for 5 days is going to take its toll on your mental aspect, but to come up and bowl... to continue to bowl each over, and then, you know, there'll be points where you'll rest, but you'll do kind of 10 to 12 overs at a time. and have that mental aspect of trying to get the same person out and learning tactically about the ways that he's been out in the past, whether it's through, you know, the way that he plays his shots leaves him more open to LBWs, to left armers, and it's having that particular skill set and that particular mental aspect, because it's incredibly difficult to consistently throw a ball however many yards down a field to make it pitch and hit three stumps. That I think the mental aspect is there in cricket just in the same as it would be in tennis, but without the physical exertion.
Oh, maybe for the players, just not for me as a watcher.
Yeah, exactly.
There's just nothing
keeping as a player, yeah.
There is another one-on-one sport that we briefly mentioned.
Kick punching,
with occasional choking. Does anybody like kick punching and choking?
I've not. I mean, I suppose my only experience of any kind of fighting sport has been some movies. So, for boxing, Creed is an excellent movie, which is a follow-up to Rocky films. But that's like my only real understanding of those kind of sports at all is from watching a few movies.
I love watching UFC.
Yeah, I used to watch it more than I do, but I don't anymore.
I wish I liked it more. I think particularly maybe with UFC and boxing, I know it's a bit of a shorthand to take them like as the same thing, but
they're definitely not.
You get great fights in both, but I feel that sometimes there's a lot of hype around those fights, and that takes over. It's more about the press conferences than the actual sporting event.
The build up to the fight can be a big thing, particularly with boxing. I can watch boxing. It's not really my thing to watch the whole thing. It takes a very long time for a fight to finish in boxing sometimes, unless there's a surprise knockout. You know, you have many, many rounds of five minutes in boxing. Many rounds of 3 minutes, I think. And it's comparing boxing and UFC would be like comparing rugby and American football, in that boxing is a much longer form. There are more stops. It's a more limited moveset and skill set. I don't think anyone can deny that. It's definitely a more limited moveset and skill set, but it does also mean sometimes that the peak of that skill set is higher.
Of course.
So the world's best boxers are going to be better than the world's best UFC fighters at boxing than they are at any one thing, because they have to master far wider array of techniques to be competitive. Whereas boxers have to master a few things, but they have to master them to an unbelievable
level. Yeah, particularly in everything that the UFC has grown into. I mean, I know obviously in its initial aspect, it was really a way of kind of pitting different ways of fighting against each other. Whereas now it is a lot more rounded, but you do still have, you know, the people that will be specialists in boxing, specialists in, well, it's more kickboxing now, or Muay Thai or BJJ, and it gives that particular aspect of surprise.
Conor McGregor, everybody knows the name of. Somehow he got enormous very fast in the media. He is a striker. Primarily, he's a counter-striker. So Conor McGregor will wait for you to come in. He will use long reach and fast reactions, very accurate striking, to pinpoint you on your way in and stagger you back. He fights best from a defensive position and from a standing position. Khabib, who defeated him, is a wrestler. He is just a wrestler. He can strike, but he's predominantly a grappler. And I've not seen that fight at Dave, so I'm not
sure yet.
But Anderson Silva's one of the world's greatest of all time. He ragdolled Conor, and it was always going to be a case of, can Conor catch him on the way in? Because if he can't, he loses. If Conor can catch him on the way in and knock him out, he'll win. And if he can't, he has no chance because his ground game is so much weaker. Daniel Cormier, again, specialist wrestler, light heavyweight champion until recently, heavyweight champion at the same time, predominantly wrestler, went to fight the heavyweight champion, stepped up a degree. Heavyweight champion is a striker. Much bigger guy as well. So the question was, can Cormier grapple him? Cormier surprised everybody with a bit of dirty boxing, got his head round the back of his opponent, and then managed to strike him clean on the jaw and knock him out in the first round. So people break style and they break time. And there's a lot of things to take into account. There's a lot of styles. There's a lot of unpredictability. There's definitely a mental game. And that's what a lot of the build-up that you mentioned, Rob, plays into. A lot of times it's players trying to get, fighters trying to get under each other's skin in order to rile them up and cause them to make mistakes due to being too emotional. Some of the best fighters are some of the coldest fighters, some of the ones who are not riled, some of the ones who are able to tune all of that out and not get emotional. Similarly, other fighters use their emotion to their advantage and get the adrenaline surge and the aggression. It's incredibly intricate. I love it for its athleticism. I love it for its brutality. I love it for... I like the respectful fighters, not the mouthy fighters, which is uncommon. They're usually the mouthy fighters are the more popular ones. And my friend watched it with me once. He's never really been into it, but he thoroughly enjoyed it because he said it's like watching chess. I've got a friend who loves watching the strikers, who are aggressive and big hitters, and he likes to see the big boom, or as he puts it, he likes to see them claw at each other. And then I've got another friend who can't stand those fighters, but loves the grapplers, because he says it's like watching a chess player. They're looking for the right angle, they're looking for the right timing and moment to position things correctly. There's so many variables to it that it's really hard to even start talking about, and I really enjoy it.
Yeah, and I'm not going to spoil anything or anything like that. I mean, my following of UFC tends to be through highlight videos at the minute, mainly because I try and watch things live if I can, and it's very difficult to do it at the time when the UFC's on and, you know, life getting in the way. But, you know, the recent fight that's hitting the headlines for a very good reason of generally just being a damn entertaining match was through Anderson Silva and Israel... I'm probably going to butcher this name.
Israel Adesanya.
Thank you very much. And it's having that entertainment aspect of from it, the fact that it is so unpredictable in what's happening, that there are so many different...
And there's some good context here. Exactly. As well. So Anderson Silva is one of the greatest UFC fighters of all time, one of the longest reigning champions of all time, one of the most dominant champions of all time. And about 3-4 years ago, he lost his belt. And then had a rematch. And during that match, he was horrifically injured through a freak accident, really. He threw a very hard leg kick. His opponent checked it with a knee. And the shin bone of Silva throwing the kick snapped, and his leg wrapped all the way around his opponent's leg. It was revolting to watch. He went back to stand on it, collapsed. And even at the end of the fight, his opponent said, yeah, I wanted to win, but I didn't necessarily want to win like this. I wish him speedy recovery. Silva has had a very hard road to recovery. Rehab, training, medical, fights. He's not the fighter he once was, because his body instinctively tries to draw back sometimes when he throws those kicks. His body just doesn't want to do it as a survival mechanism. Israel Adesanya is one of the next big things. He's an up-and-coming fighter. He had not yet lost. I don't know the result of this fight yet, but up until this point, he's not yet lost. His nickname is the Last Stylebender, because he does not fit into any category. He does not fit into Muay Thai, Jiu-Jitsu, kickboxing, boxing, wrestling. He is a very unique fighter that has learned a lot of different elements, like many of them do, but has very much forged his own style from it. And he is also a huge fan of Silva's career. And it's this young prodigy versus this old prodigy of two people who greatly respect each other. And if you like narrative, Robert, if you like narrative, UFC is pumped full of it.
Yeah, I think that I would need to know the background of the fighters and get invested in one or two of them to really enjoy it. You mentioned earlier how it's like a chess game, and I think it's quite a technical sport, and certainly in the intricacies of the grappling, I couldn't appreciate until I'd watched a few matches. But if I was invested in a certain character or personalities, then I think that would definitely draw me into the sport more.
The way you've just described him reminds me a lot of when I was first watching Lomachenko in boxing, particularly in the aspect of him not being the same as a lot of the other guys that would box, you know, having a different style, to the point that he would make guys that he's fighting look completely amateur, and really, really kind of change his style to the point that a lot of people would not know what he was going to be doing, which within boxing is sometimes a lot more difficult because you can only hit people with your fists. But I think one of the things that I enjoyed about the fight between Silva and Israel was having that, was having that unpredictability of both of their styles and really having that mesh together. It was an absolutely phenomenal fight.
I mean, Silva's one of the best strikers that's ever existed. His ability to pinpoint throw a strike from absurd distances with speed is almost unparalleled. Yeah, the narratives are great. You do need to follow it to start building the narratives. About a year ago, I started watching it every month with two of my friends who are big wrestling fans who've got very disillusioned with wrestling as an industry. They've worked in it for a while, and they've got very fed up with seeing the same narratives over and over, and the same sort of elements of predictability in the large promotions. So they've now looked at UFC as an alternative where things aren't predetermined, where there is still some of the same physicality, and whereas there is still some of the same narrative structure, but with the element of unpredictability of it actually being a competitive sport. They each have their own sort of favourite styles and fighters now, but you do need to start watching it. You do need to sort of start getting a good idea of what people are doing. But you can enjoy it without knowing necessarily what they're doing, because you will spot things that excite you.
And that is the same with wrestling, and I mean, I don't think I've watched WWE for a long time. And obviously I know that if they're involved with the sport, if they're involved with wrestling as well, then I can see where, you know, the boredom may come from if you're watching a lot of the mainstream stuff. I mean, I watch wrestling
especially because in WWE especially, they tend to use the same spots and movesets over and over again to the point where it's incredibly repetitive.
I am a fan of wrestling, as you well know, but I'm more of a fan for just the athletic ability aspect of it.
I much prefer the Japanese stuff where it's a bit stiffer, exactly. It's a bit harder hitting, it's a bit faster and a bit more flowing, and they focus more on the physicality than the gimmick.
I mean, I will quite happily watch Minoru Suzuki and Ishii just elbow each other in the jaw for a good 10 minutes and get the same amount of buzz off it that some kid would do doing flips, seeing someone do flips off a top rope. I think in the same way that a lot of people have different styles in MMA, particularly with Japanese wrestling, there's a lot of different styles there as well.
UFC's a good one to try. If only because they have fights every week behind sort of various paywalls and various subscriptions, but the fights that matter are every month. So you can get together with some friends once a month. It's not too taxing or strenuous. You can watch a four and a half hour event where each fight is three rounds of 5 minutes. Over the course of one event, you're going to see five, six fights, and you're going to see different styles. You're going to see different weights. You're going to see different genders. So you're going to get a wide variety of show. You're going to get some breakdown analysis in between if you're interested in it. And at the end, there's going to be a five round fight, usually a title fight. You will develop people you like, people you don't like, and it's because it's monthly, it's easy to consume in that way. It's not too tacky. Each individual bit isn't too long before there's a break. Some fights are over quickly, some fights aren't. One of the questions I was asked by one of the lads who started watching with me is, but what happens if you're looking at a five round title fight and it's over in the first 30 seconds? Are you not suddenly gutted that it's over? You're not disappointed that you don't get to watch 25 minutes of fighting? And say no, because it's exciting, because you never expect it to happen. And the narratives are definitely there. Some guys really hate each other. Some guys get along and respect each other. Some guys play up the aggression and the abuse in order to try and sell tickets. Sometimes you can tell when people are just having it on and sort of playing a bit of a heel. Sometimes people genuinely just really can't stand each other. But if you like narrative-based sports, I don't think there is any more narrative-based competitive sport than UFC.
Yeah, particularly because it's an individual thing as well.
Oh, that being said, Team UFC, Team MMA does exist. It's not UFC. It's ridiculous. It shouldn't be.
Is
a sport.
It in Russia?
Has anyone ever seen Team MMA?
Is it in Russia? I have a feeling that
Poland. I
have a feeling that I've seen clips of it, and it is gloriously exactly what you would expect.
This is Poland versus Sweden.
Yeah, I've seen this.
It is absurd. It shouldn't be a thing. I don't know if you can call this sport or just like gladiator arena. It's just the fact that they can punch each other in the back of the head. The fact that it's far more like an actual fight than any sport in existence because it's multiple people. How often are fights actually between two people? They're almost usually between groups of people, right? Or one person starts, one person, two more people join in.
Yeah, this is just Millwall West Ham in the 80s.
There is a Brazil versus UK video as well.
Oh dear. It's so glorious. It's one of those things that you just... It's there and it's brilliant that it is, but dear Lord, why is it there?
Right, it starts at 2 minutes 20.
You see, to me, I'm going to sound harsh now. To me, it just looks really silly. It's just chaos.
Obviously, it's obviously five grown men beating the crap out of another five grown men.
It's a Royal Rumble.
Is silly and chaotic. Like, there is no, like, what is it? Like, I mean, it's someone's out as well. Okay. It's one team suddenly got a distinct advantage.
Are there rules?
Like, I don't know. I just love the fact. I love the fact that you know the head referee is the head referee because he's wearing a GoPro on his chest.
He's just like staring his chest at them, which is a bit weird.
And there's guys stood.
He's like, nah, you know what? This one's had enough, mate. Get off.
There's like guys at the corners just making sure. There's guys just making sure the tires don't fall over in the corner. It's just like
ball boys, like, but for tires.
How is that a sport? Just 5-on-5. And this leads us into ESPN 8, The Ocho, an obscure sport.
I was going to say, just before we went into that, I mentioned Freakonomics in passing earlier, and as a specific episode, I'll bung in the show notes and I've put in our chat, that is talking about like the labour force within sporting, within sports, how it works. And as I mentioned, it's about, you know, how it's a bit different over in the US. UFC is one of their case studies because it's really interesting, because UFC was basically seen as not monetizable until like the mid-2000s.
For a long time, yeah.
And
they had to introduce more stringent rules in order to make it even remotely powerful.
Yeah, so they had to do that. And then they also, they really built on the story side. And what's really interesting is they are one of the few sports that has basically built up all of their production in-house. Everyone else, you know, sells a contract to someone else like ESPN to do it, whereas UFC have actually built up all that infrastructure themselves, which means they take home a lot more of the money from their events as a percentage. But then the interesting thing is that their actual the actual fighters don't get as much of a percentage as you would expect. Or in fact, sorry, I think they get more of a percentage, but they get a lot less money than you'd expect, or something like that. But it's interesting.
Yeah, so the big name UFC fighters make a lot of money because they bring in a lot of views. But starting UFC fighters are expected to do their own promotion, their own marketing. They're expected to try and draw views to their shows. And this is why you get the build-up that Rob's not a fan of. Why you get the mouthing off, why you get the snarky comments, the things. It's because people are trying to generate interest. They're trying to make it more than a fight. They're trying to make it a show. And they're more importantly, they're trying to make people buy a ticket. Because that's how they get onto the main card. And the main card's where the money's at. Conor McGregor shot up through the rankings through a combination of being the cockiest man you've ever seen and winning every fight very convincingly. And that is a golden recipe that works until his first loss, where it suddenly falls apart. Because once he's not backing up the words anymore, they're empty. But people use their mouths to get onto the main show, and then they have to back it up. And you have to have a combination of showmanship outside of the ring and athleticism and skill inside of the ring to succeed and to make the money. Ronda Rousey did a very interesting video, actually. Sorry, Dave, you made...
No, sorry, that's why Muhammad Ali was so big as he was at that particular time, because he wasn't just a great boxer, he was amazing on the microphone in pre-match.
Well, he basically invented smack talking, exactly. Didn't he? It didn't really exist before Muhammad
exactly.
Ali. So Ronda Rousey had a great interview in Australia, which was very interesting, where an Australian lady asked her, do you think it's fair that the Australian women's football team earn so much less than the Australian men's football team? And Ronda Rousey said, yes. And the woman's like, but don't you think that's sexist? She said, no, there's nothing sexist about it. I work for the least sexist sport in the world because I don't fight in the women's division. I fight in the bantamweight division. They don't need to call it a men's division or a women's division. It's just another weight category. And I am currently the highest earner in the UFC because I sell the most tickets, because people tune into the shows with my name on them. Said, and when the Australian women's team sell as many tickets or draw as much of a crowd as the men's team, they have a right to earn the same money. But until then, I don't think they have a right to complain, which is a very interesting perspective to hear a female athlete take. Obviously, it's easy for her to take when she's earning the most money, but as she said, she is earning the most money because that's the name people are tuning in to see.
Yeah, I think there is, I mean, tied in with that is it's with a lot of these things, there's the kind of what has been the norm, like the problems we have with the gender pay gap and so on. And so part of the reason maybe that there is a smaller audience is because it's not been put out there, because people have gone, oh, there won't be an audience.
It's unfortunately sick.
Yeah, that's the problem. Like, it's not necessarily one fix with a lot of these things.
I would rather watch women's football than men's football because I feel like they play the game instead of descending into behaviour that I don't appreciate. The women's rugby is strictly just not as good as the men's rugby to watch. They're not as good at the game. They're not as well drilled. They're not as athletic. They're not as powerful. But how much better would it be if it had the investment in the infrastructure? Not necessarily if the women were paid more, but if more money was invested into it, if more money was invested into their training, into their coaching, into drawing women into the sport. You know, if it got better, it would attract more women. If more women played, the pool would get better, and it would become a positive sign.
You're only gonna get that if more people would be attending and watching, though.
Yes, which is why I think it's great that if you go to a Six Nations game, you get to attend the women's game for free.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
So you can go watch the England women's team after you've seen the men's team. It's usually on later in the day or the next day.
It's really good. They do similar stuff in cricket as well, and. To briefly bring it up, the English cricket team is one of the first to go professional. So full-time, you get paid to be a cricketer. You don't have to balance it with other responsibilities, which was what so much of women's sport was doing for so long. And it's incredible to see how much the standards have improved in such a short period of time. If you give them that level.
It requires the investment in the first place. So, yeah, moving on from UFC, from balls with rackets, balls with bats, egg-shaped balls, and balls that people fall over and cry. The Ocho, ESPN 8, the dodgeball joke, weird sports, team MMA. Has anyone heard of that? What's the Italian sport, which is like football mixed with MMA? Has anyone seen that?
Do you mean handball? No.
No.
I know a lot of Italians play handball, that's the only reason.
There's a really annual Calcio Florentino. So if no one's seen Calcio Florentino, I don't know what the rules are. It's an annual game played in Florence, which seems to involve physical violence and a ball, and the players are drawn from which quarter of the city they live in and are all volunteers. It's weird, and it's bizarre, and it's a historic sort of pastime or a historic event in the city.
Wow, that's...
That reminds me, actually, massively of a game that a number of the girls that I used to coach playing American football got involved with in India, which apparently is watched by thousands of people, and it goes by the name of Kabaddi.
Kabaddi,
I'm just trying to find... It's basically tag on steroids. And you will get thousands upon thousands of people watching it. It's either in arenas or in, kind of big fields in a similar way that the
I like these animated faces. I like the one on the team is the Pirates with purple.
And it's basically you have to tag someone and then run to the other side before the rest of the team hit you. And like everyone has different roles and things like that, and apparently lots of people.
These
two
mascots, right, in this sort of Indian Pakistani sport, right? You've got one fairly Indian looking mascot, and one guy that just looks like a traditional Western.
So we actually played Kabaddi. I don't think you can get away with it now, but when I was an Explorer Scout, Kabaddi was a game we'd play on summer camp, and it's
why have they got to hold hands?
I don't remember holding hands being a thing.
A lot of these men are holding
it's because,
hands. I mean, maybe they've got advanced tactics. All I remember about it is you're not allowed to take a breath once you leave your like home area. And so to prove you're not taking a breath, you have to repeatedly say kabaddi, 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 kabaddi. And invariably you would run out
of
breath
halfway
through.
Yeah, I don't...
None of these people are doing that. I think you may have played a game that you thought was...
Yeah.
I mean, that is... Yeah. I've got the shots sporting and gaming and idling Marcellin, and it mentions you can't take a breath. I think we just decided to make you say kabaddi.
Well, none of them are saying anything over and over. I'm watching clips of it and none of that is happening.
Maybe they've updated it because that is really dangerous.
Yeah,
as we found out.
It's basically a mixture of dodgeball and rugby.
That's interesting. I would play it. People are hurting each other.
And there's flashing lights.
I mean, other obscure sports. Ireland's full of obscure sports.
I'll just watch.
What's hurling all about? Or Gaelic football?
Hurling's just throwing up on a Saturday night, isn't it?
In Oldham.
Well, anywhere, to be honest. Football?
Have you not seen Gaelic
No,
football?
I've not heard of it.
Gaelic football's mess.
I've heard of Aussie rules football, but not
Gaelic football is basically...
Gaelic football's probably the closest thing to Aussie rules.
But you have rugby posts and a football net.
There is an annual Ireland versus Australia Gaelic Aussie rules crossover game.
Ooh.
That happens every year, where they mix the two sports.
That sounds amazing.
I've not watched Aussie Rules. My other half loves it. Half her family live in Australia. She very much enjoys it. That also has a draft system, like American football, to try and ensure that teams can't buy an advantage. But yeah, Gaelic football seems to involve having a football, occasionally dribbling it like a basketball, carrying it in your hands, or just booting it. I don't know the rules, but it's definitely an obscure sport outside
of it. It's almost like the wonderfully other American random games that... Well, I suppose one of them would fit in the Ocho one, possibly not, but Ultimate Frisbee.
Ultimate Frisbee is definitely an Ocho sport.
It's definitely an Ocho sport. The other one, lacrosse, but I know that it's massively popular in the US.
Lacrosse is huge in the UK as well, like just in very specific middle class to upper class schools.
But it's one of those that if you go and watch a lacrosse game having no idea what's going on, you really have no idea what's going on.
It just looks like people hitting sticks, doesn't it? Which is hurling is like lacrosse. Hurling's like Irish lacrosse. So it's like lacrosse.
So it's like lacrosse, but you hit people with sticks more.
Yeah. You know, the Scottish have golf, that obscure sport played only by businessmen. appears to be an arcane ritual to make deals. there's hacky sack. Wow, what other obscure sports can we name?
I don't know if this counts, but round our way, cheese rolling.
That's not a sport.
That's a sport.
It's competitive.
It's something that it's dumb physical. Teenagers and drunk men participate in.
It's competition, it's physical activity, you know?
And there's cheese for often.
And there's cheese.
Exactly. I'm starting to realise that most of my sports revolve around meals, but yeah, no, this is... It's excellent fun.
Oh wow!
I'm not sure that will make it on the outro, but that is ridiculous.
No, does anyone ever make it to the bottom of the hill without falling over? Anyone?
I don't think so. I would like to. I would like you, if you could pick the competitors. Let's say, like, let's have Piers Morgan and Jacob Rees-Mogg running down this hill.
Then I would be putting that. A string halfway down and a pit of spikes. So for anyone who's not aware, Rob has just linked us to Gloucester cheese rolling, which involves getting a big wheel of cheese and rolling it down a hill while a large number of stupid people chase it and inevitably...
I'm pretty certain they're all amateurs as well. It's like...
I don't think there is a paid competitive version of cheese rolling.
It's the angle that everyone is stood at trying to watch this thing of struggling not to fall down the hill themselves.
Yeah.
There's competitive airsoft.
Yes, That's the thing I could get behind, having played Airsoft. I could watch that. It's cool. Like, I don't know if you remember, there was a paintball TV show for a while. I think it ran for like 2 seasons, where they got like generic groups of people and they put them through like a paintball arena. That was quite good. But I feel like Airsoft would be better than that, because the problem with the paintball thing was they'd have to come up with like weird ways of making it like interesting, because in fact, I mean, they just had better paintball guns essentially. But like, it was a bit like gladiators, but with paintball guns, I suppose.
So the reason pro paintballing, for example, came about is actually quite interesting, in that it basically became illegal in certain parts of the world or country, I can't remember which one it was, to carry paintballs or airsoft guns, or to use them just for recreation and for like sport or competition or anything like that. You know, you couldn't just go and have an airsofting game.
Canada is the one where that's famous.
So they got around it by introducing cameras and claiming they were in fact filming, because you could use them as props in a film or TV show. So they just began to film all of the events they did, which naturally just resulted in it becoming a competitive sport that was broadcast.
Now, the other one that I always try and remember the name of, and it takes me a good 5 minutes to try and YouTube, is from the wonderful world of Japan, called...
Well, that's a good start.
Botaoshi. Where you are split up into two different teams and you have to tip a pole over. And there is one dude on your team that is just sat on the top of this pole.
Is he on top of the pole?
And there is a crowd, but this is like serious. There's 150 players on each team, on the pitch. I think it's like 75 per team. Like 75 attacking, 75 defending, and you literally just run at people to try and knock the dude off the top of the pole. and the first team to knock the other team's dude off the top of the pole.
Why would you not
want
to play this?
When you watch it,
why would you not want to play this? I can think of no reason I would not want to play this.
It just
game.
Looks. It is ridiculous. The fact that there's dudes sit on the floor to like make it more sturdy. There's tactics.
It's 300 people.
Exactly. Like, it's just, it's so obscure because no one else will ever play it. But if you get to like 1 minute into the video I've posted.
Imagine how do we think other sports would be involved by having 300 players? Like, how good do we reckon 300 person football?
It'd be amazing. If you just like watch it from like 1 minute in the video and you just see waves of dudes just running at guys that are trying to hold a pole up. It's just like, what on earth? Only in Japan could you have something like this.
Why wasn't this around on Takeshi's Castle? That's what I want to know.
I think this is how you got onto a team. This is they got so many, you know, people applying to be on Takeshi's Castle that they went, right, we'll just play Botashi, and the team that wins, that's who goes on the castle.
Yeah, that is weird and wonderful. So the original idea behind this episode was Tom doesn't like sport, do you, Tom? Tom likes board games.
I'm not super into sport. Like, I think maybe the key thing is that I don't follow sport week to week. I think that's the thing that most people who are into sport do that I don't do.
And I think you were saying that you don't understand why anyone would, right?
I mean, yeah. I want to be clear. I don't care if other people do or don't like sport. It's like I don't find it interesting.
No one thinks you're.
No. I mean.
We're just expressing that you are on one end of the spectrum.
And I'm just making that clear, like, so people don't write in and be like, oh no, you don't.
Dave, no, we're fine for people to think you're a weirdo. I'm okay with that. Anyone who thinks Tom's a weirdo, I can confirm it's definitely true. Right? But Rob and Dave here, they love sport. They really enjoy sport. Different sports maybe. Some of the same ones, some different ones. But this is their chance to pitch to you why you should pick a sport, any sport, and really get into it. Really, really follow it. Doesn't matter which sport it is. Doesn't even matter if it's a specific sport. Why should Tom follow a sport?
Well, I guess my biggest reason is sport is always there for you, okay? So wherever you are, you'll always know that more sport is on the horizon. That's why I choose to follow a multitude of different sports that go over both winter and the summer to make sure the sport never ends. You know, on our podcast, we talk about Brexit and the uncertainty and what's going to happen after that. Do you know what? Sport's going to continue after that. It's always going to be there, and it's always sort of like a distraction from the real world. It's something to invest your time in. I'm going to share something in the chat now that you've probably seen before. It's an amazing sketch from Mitchell and Webb, which is watch the football. That sort
it's
of shows
going to
you,
move.
Yeah.
Sorry.
but at the end of that, it says like football will be here for the end of time, forever and ever. The football will never stop. And that's so true. It'll even if you go through an entire season and lose and keep losing, as my team did for so many years, until eventually last year I went to go to Wembley and we won. We went up a division, and the time I put in that, the fact that I'd had a season of success that it finally paid off, the high of that was.
It's hard when it's in the opposite
incredible.
Way, though.
Yeah, but I'd had 26 years of failure before that. My team had never finished in the top six of a division in my entire lifetime.
Was your father finally able to tell you that he was proud?
Pretty much, yeah. We watched it together. I mean, that's another thing with sport. That's probably why I like it so much. I was able to see it with my dad, and it's a good bonding thing. But
I can't watch sport with my dad. He's an Indian.
But yeah, that's my main reason for watching sport. It's always there. It'll never let you down. Sometimes your team will lose, but there's always just another chance just around the corner. There's always something to look forward to with sport.
Yeah, on that note, in the inverse, I watch esports as well as my two fighting sports. I watch Professional League of Legends. Fnatic have been a top two or top three team since the start of the league about 7 or 8 years ago, and they were in the world final last year, and now they are in 8th or 9th place out of 10 this year after losing only one of their 5-man squad, and it's really, really devastating. But, you know, it's hard sometimes to stick with a team, especially if there's roster changes. But when you do stick with the team and your faith is rewarded, it's a great feeling. So I just have to have faith that, that this team will come back and will give me the exciting games that they have done in the past.
I think one thing I'd like to touch on that Rob mentioned was talking about like bonding with your dad or something over sport. And you mentioned, oh, you know, your dad supports England. So you haven't bonded with him. But like, so my brother is the sporty one in the family.
That being said, he does ask me questions about the rules and about the teams because I follow it more deeply than him. So he does come to me for my opinions in an attempt to bond with me.
So I think the thing with me is that that's not the thing I bonded with my dad over. So my brother was the sporty one and he and dad went to see football games and dad tried to take me to some football games.
Oh, so I get it. Your brother was the favourite.
but dad and I bonded over other things. Like dad always like showed me little science experiments or whatever when I was a kid. So like we did stuff like that instead. We model making, things like that. The kind of nerdier side of me, my dad also had. So that's the kind of thing I did with him. And I think probably the thing that's missing is I don't have someone who I am in close proximity to, who would make like talk to me about the sport and take me to like to the pub to watch the sport. And I think that's like I can understand the social aspect of, because when the World Cup has been on and I've been at uni, we would all watch all the games, drink a few beers and chat, and I would follow it within that context, but I'd just let go of it as soon as there wasn't that social aspect.
Yeah, I do think most sports are better as a social event. Tribalism is a huge, huge part of sport. It's never more apparent than at international events when it sort of strays into nationalism to an extent. And I think it is a substitute for tribal conflict in modern times. It gives people groups to belong to, and it also gives people groups to other in a somewhat safe way, until it strays into violence. Football violence is like that taken to an extreme. It's this tribalism gone to an extreme level. But most of the time, it never strays that level in most sports. And it gives people a feeling of belonging and also a feeling of unity. The theme of the Rugby World Cup every year, the tune that plays is called A World in Union. You know, and the idea that it brings people together from across multiple cultures. I did Secret Santa on Reddit this year, and I wrote a bit about myself, and it turns out my Secret Santa plays rugby sevens in Portugal and sent me a Portuguese rugby sevens ball, thinking that, you know, quite rightly, it would be nice to receive something that is something I love, but from another place where people who are so different still engage in something I love. And that would be one of my arguments, is that it really does bring people together far more than it divides people. Dave, what is your argument for why he should watch sport? You can pick a sport. You can pick generic sport. You can convince him of however you like. Or you might even think he shouldn't watch sport and he should just stick to science experiments.
I think the other thing to look at it, I'm trying to answer it and not cover the same points. I mean, obviously we've said a lot about the social aspects and a lot of the, you know, it's always good to go to the pub and enjoy sport with people that you might not see a lot of the time, and even new people as well. But for me, the joys of sport comes from the involvement that you get from either playing or from coaching, and having that aspect and that camaraderie with not just the people that you're playing with on the team that you're on, but the club that you're a part of, the team that you're playing against, knowing that, particularly with my involvement with what can be seen as more of a minority sport in the UK, of having pretty much an extended family that runs well into the hundreds of people that I'm able to give a call to if I'm in Sheffield or if I'm in Bristol or if I'm in Scotland, to be able to go and have a drink with people that I've played American football with or against or been to coaching clinics with. And it gives almost like a sense of family outside of just the area that you're in. And even when I was playing rugby for a club based in Drolsden, there was a lot of that camaraderie from being involved with a club, even though you might be the worst team in the division. The fact that you'll have, you know, 14 other people on the pitch and 20 other people that are involved within the club or within that particular team, every single year and every single time, every single Saturday and Sunday, you can go down to the club and be part of the social aspect of having almost like an extended family of people of different ages, and you'll sit and chat and have drinks with people if you're of a certain age, with people that would be playing on different teams. And the club that I was part of when I played rugby through from the age of under 13s through to under 18s had that great family atmosphere that by the time you do get to 18, everyone tends to know who you are because you've been around for 4, 5, 6 years. You know, you've got, yeah, they've seen you grow up. You've got some of the dads of the lads that are in the teams, you know, using that as bonding sessions by coaching some of the different teams. And it's really family oriented in the fact that it won't just be the player that would turn up. The player would bring his dad or his mum or his brother or all the connection of them. And they would then get ingrained with the club, and they might not particularly play, but they're still part of the club. They will still show, you know, particularly this time of the year, they'll show Six Nations matches, or they'll show Premiership rugby matches or Pro 14 matches. They'll make sure that people are ingrained within that club mentality. Now, I'm not too sure whether it's still the same as it is now, because I've not been involved with rugby for a long time, but it was that aspect that I got not only from rugby, but I also did through my scouting when I was younger. I was involved with scouts through to the beginnings of Explorers, I believe it was, when they were first introduced. And the similar sort of feeling that I got within the group of scouts that we had within our troop and within our area was also felt for me exactly the same when it comes to the club mentality when you're part of a club.
Yes, it's a really good point, and I'm just going to follow on with it with the fact that I recently attended my aunt's funeral, and she was 50. She died unexpectedly and suddenly after a slight, very quick deterioration due to a brain tumour. But the wake was held at Carnarvon Rugby Club, because my aunt and my uncle have spent so many of their years from teens to adults and parents themselves at that rugby club, socialising with those people, playing with those people, coaching with those people, that is their community more than anything else.
Yeah, and I think one of the other points that might look towards kind of your ever popular, you know, spoken about nerdy side would be the fact of looking at a statistics aspect. So
yeah, I've definitely, because the one or two things I have occasionally, people have been like, oh, you should play a fantasy football league or something like that.
And you will never see as many like unintelligent meatheads be that into statistics in
fantasy
any
football
other context.
Is often described as D&D for people who used to beat up nerds.
Mate, it's even worse when you look at fantasy baseball. Like, the amount of stats that you can throw at a baseball game is just insane. It's the one thing that it's got over cricket, is the fact that you can confuse the hell out of whoever you want when you play 162 games in a season. Like, there are so many different ways that you can look at statistics. A lot of them are absolutely pointless, but there's so many different ways, and it shows how different people think of what's most important within the game.
Has anybody seen this fantasy football sketch?
I feel like I have. I feel like it's one I'm alluding to, but I don't know if it is the one.
Starring the wonderful Matthew Mercer.
Possibly, but for everything you need to know about American football, just watch The League. It's such a good show.
I haven't seen this one. Matt Mercer's just turned up in a wizard's hat. I'll have to watch that later, but I've definitely seen some sketches which are, you know, about fantasy football being.
Is that clip from The League?
No. So, for instance, particularly with baseball, when you can have videos such as math in baseball, you know, it gives you an idea. There's certain YouTube series that the name does elude me that will look into these different statistical aspects, not only of baseball, but of football, of American football, of so many different sports, and really kind of break it down into looking into one particular area.
I mean, like, the 1014 Rugby channel is a channel I'll give a huge shout out to. It's a nice Irish fellow and a nice New Zealand fellow that quit their jobs to try and go full-time making a YouTube content, and have now been picked up by Sky during major tournaments. They go into some really interesting depth on statistics, and one of the things they go into depth on is depth. So depth is this concept in a squad of any sport, I would guess, but definitely rugby, where
in rugby, you get a lot of injuries, and you also need a lot of rest periods. If you're in a World Cup, you might have two games in 2 weeks, and certain players might not be fit for both those games. So you need to have players ready. At the last World Cup, Wales had 12 injuries by the time they played England in a squad of 15 people. Right? So they need depth. They need a huge, deep pool of talent to draw from, of experienced players. So teams have been trying to build depth in each position, and they've got this fantastic chart around 4 minutes for England that shows how many players they've had play in that position over the last year or two, and then what percentage of game time each of those players has had. And you can see that they've got this idea or this statistic in the head where ideally you want your best or your first choice players to have maybe 40, 50% of your game time, then your second choice player to have maybe 30% of your game time, and then maybe 10% for your next two choices. So you've always got these players who are not only talented but experienced and integrated with your squad in order to interchange those pieces as and when you need it. And that's just one area where you wouldn't think of that if you weren't that involved in the sport, because you watch it per game. You don't think of it on a tournament basis. The statistics can go into defensive stats, offensive stats, number of offloads, number of successful tackles. I mean, Justin Tipperick didn't miss a tackle for a year. That was an incredible statistic. And I mean, I can only imagine that there's an awful lot of statistics to play within cricket as well.
Oh, tons. I think Tom mentioned...
I bet they're all boring.
Oh, look, you've got Andy Zaltzman, who's a great comedian, works with the Bugle. He's a cricket stato on the side and does great stats, like how many consecutive two runs people have scored, or, you know, when playing on this ground, they've got this many wickets for this many runs. You say you don't understand the scoring in cricket, there's a big bar down the bottom of the screen which just constantly tracks all of the numbers. Having to explain to somebody that 0.5 of an over actually means that they're 5/6 of the way through an over is, you know, a difficult one at first. And then, you know, all the different numbers against every player's name, it must be baffling the first time you see it.
Yeah, I mean, like, a lot of the cricket score is something over something, and I'm like, it's not a blood pressure, for fuck's sake, come on, just give me a number. Fuck does that mean?
Yeah, but it's incredible when you break it down. And yeah, I don't think it can compare to baseball in the same way, though, which is just an incredible amount of numbers.
No, sorry, I was just going to say, I've linked in the chat there an aspect of looking at just kind of breaking down individual stats as well. It's through the SB Nation channel. They will have different stuff that will either focus on individual players or how the game has changed and evolved by looking at different things. And it just goes to show that how much you can break things down into statistics to make things from someone who may be from an intellectual aspect a lot more interesting.
I was going to say, I think baseball is famously the sport, isn't it, where a fairly low-ranked team took on a statistician, and then the next year they were pretty high up in the league.
Yeah, it was with, I think it was a film called Moneyball that was brought out. That is an absolutely phenomenal film that I watched far too late. Yes. That's based on the Oakland Athletics from not too long ago.
But it is as good as Invictus.
Watch it. Watch the mentality of it, and it'll really open your eyes into how people would think.
But I mean, statistics must be useful from a coaching perspective as well, Dave, because you have coached. If you know that from just looking at data that certain players have certain tendencies, this player drifts in this direction this percent of the time, you can begin to exploit those tendencies. And it's the exact same way that in UFC, John Jones said, you know, Daniel Cormier's got a bad habit and I'm going to exploit it. Daniel Cormier said, look, I know what you're on about. You're not going to catch me with that right kick when I lower my left hand after throwing a punch. And then he caught him with the right kick after he lowered his left hand and he caught him straight in the head and knocked him out. Like, people have tendencies and habits, and these expand to teams, to coaching setups, and they can inform your decisions as a coach.
Yeah, I mean, what we will tend to do, going back to alluding when you were talking about the quarterback being really smart, is that teams with American football will tend to have tendencies, and defenses or offenses will look a certain way when they're playing a certain way. And we use a lot of game film that we get that teams openly share with each other. But it means that, you know, we're having to make sure that we know exactly how often people will run a certain play, or if they're in a certain defensive look, what will their coverage look like? Where would the gaps be? And it's having that thought process that, yes, it helps if everyone's on the same page, but it's usually, you know, kind of one or two leaders on the field that will be able to help out and work that through. And obviously the coaches need to make sure that their game plans are around that.
Do you think of it as a science experiment, Tom?
So the thing I was going to say to Dave's points was, so I find it interesting you mentioned scouting, because the thing I started to think of when you were talking about going around the country, being able to meet up with someone and have a chat, for me,
scouting is not a sport.
No, it's not a sport, but the
counting
point is...
Counting is not a sport, Tom.
No, it's not. But, like, the statistics, yes, that's interesting, but, like, I feel like I fulfill all of these needs that I've, you know, I feel people are interested in these things, but I feel that I fulfill them in other ways, because, like, the thing about the statistics, I find statistics interesting, but I will spend silly amounts of time having discussions about, you know, how optimizing D&D characters or something like that, even though I don't play as a min-maxer, but I love the fact that I can come up with some stupid 20 level build that, like, has six different classes in it. And
you could do that in sport. You just also rely on people's physical ability to implement that plan.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's what I'm saying. But, like, the thing is, I don't feel like I'm missing out on these things. I'm just getting them in a different way. And, like, that camaraderie and feeling of friendship definitely comes for me through scouting, because I have a network of people all over the country who I can go and hang out with if I'm passing through. And it's over the generations as well. And I think that's, as you say, it's an important thing within scouting. And if you're in a local scout group for a long time, you know, I've only been with my current Explorer unit for just over a year and a half. And in that time, we had some excellent 17-year-olds become 18-year-olds, and they still come back and help. And I've gone and seen one of them in a play. 16-year-olds
tend to become 18-year-olds. Takes about 2 years.
They're still involved. They haven't just disappeared off to uni and not been involved. You can see, like, you see people growing up and stuff like that. And I was once that young person who grew up and, you know, people in my scout unit knew me, and then I ended up being a leader. So I think there is an elements of those things you mentioned I find elsewhere. That doesn't mean that I couldn't also find them through sport.
Let me try another angle. It lets you blend in with the muggles.
But, I mean, I'm fairly good at just chatting to people about random stuff. It's just the one, I just won't touch on sport. Like, if people keep asking me about sport, then I'll be like,
If you were good at chatting to people, you would be talking to real people instead of putting out a podcast that you hope people listen to.
I do chat to a lot of real people outside of the podcast.
Like Craig.
Yes. Me and Craig have great conversations. He just keeps telling me he's recording.
Okay, so I don't think we've convinced him yet. I think he's still seeing it as something that it fills needs he fills elsewhere.
I mean, I said I'm going to go see a cricket game with Rob. I mean, I think...
This is neither sport nor fun. It's not going to help matters.
I'm going to try one final gambit with you, Tom.
Okay.
Which is based on this clip here. Did you see that ludicrous display last night?
I have seen this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sport is a universal conversation starter. It's a shorthand with almost any group of people that you're in as a comfort blanket to go in. You know, I follow a lot of sports just for the purpose of, if I'm at a wedding and I'm sat next to a person I don't know, at least there's a chance that there's some sport that other person follows that I can bond with them and talk to them about.
Is your argument seriously small talk?
Yes.
Is as boring as cricket.
but it acts as a universal language and a bonding thing.
Are correct. Because if you spoke to me about rugby, you'd get a conversation. But in the same regard, sport is a universal thing, but individual sports are not. So I am constantly mildly frustrated that living in Manchester, all anybody cares about is football. And I hate it. I actively dislike football. I don't just not enjoy it. Yet so few people are interested in rugby, which is a sport I'm passionate about, that half the time when people are having a conversation about football, the only lens or context I have to interpret what they're saying is rugby. And if I say, oh yeah, that's kind of like in rugby when this happened, people go, we're not talking about rugby, we're talking about football. And they're not interested. I don't have an in. So sport is universal, but individual sports aren't. So unless you follow every sport in some capacity, you can't start a conversation with everybody. If in this country, if you like football, you can almost certainly start a conversation with most men. But if you don't like football, it can leave you on the outside of that, feeling somewhat alienated and ostracized for just not getting it. Because the majority, I wouldn't even say like a lot of, the majority of workplace conversations among men seem to be about football.
I'd say that's fair.
It's interesting because I've definitely seen it happen, but I feel it's funny that, especially at my work now, I mean, my previous
job, work in a niche industry.
I do, but like the people who are into football definitely feel like they're in the minority, because occasionally I go into the kitchen to make a cup of tea and there's like the three guys who like football talking about football. And, you know, I've overheard them being like, oh, someone else who likes football whenever they talk about it, which is it's interesting seeing it the reverse of how it probably normally is.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed working in a corporate environment. Well, I didn't. But one thing I did enjoy about it was that there was a higher chance of people being interested in rugby if you spoke to people at management level. So I couldn't really speak to most of the blokes at work about sport, but I could speak to the managers, directors and, you know, senior staff, because they were more likely to be interested in rugby. But that's because there is a bit of a class divide between rugby and football in this country.
And like you mentioned with golf, I mean, that's very much, I know when I was in Manchester, one of my housemates, he was a doctor and training to be a doctor, and he took up golf at the weekends because it's known to be a thing you have to kind of get into so you can like hang out with the more senior consultants. And
yeah, and it's definitely a thing in business. It's not a stereotype. Yeah. You know, I'm a commercial consultant, and it's definitely a thing that my directors play golf. They admit badly, but they do it because it's a networking thing, not because it's a sporting thing.
I was just said exactly what I was going to say. I think a lot of the aspects, and even with regards, as I mentioned before, it's as far as the sport aspect is, it usually will come from wherever you find those initial groups of people when you are growing up, and where you tend to connect to with afterwards. And I know personally, I'll watch sports. I'll watch darts over the Christmas because it's Christmas and darts is always on. I'll watch American football whenever I can find it, which is why I'm really excited about the subpar American Football League that's just started at the moment, but it's a lot of fun. And there's lots of different things that you can watch and be involved with and have those conversations with. And most of my, in the same way that you can get podcasts for a lot of things, like most of my podcasts are just blokes being blokes and talking about stupid things to do with sport. Like, they'll have bits of, you know, interviews with different people, but they will literally talk about sport in the most stupid, typical blokey way that Americans would do. And it's just a lot of fun with regards to it. And there's even camaraderie with people that would follow the same podcasts or would follow the same sports and think the same way that some of these things will go. It's something that I do understand where you're coming from when you're saying you get a lot of things that I mentioned from that aspect, but at the same time, I know that there's quite possibly a number more that would have gathered that. And even from my particular side of things, you know, it's because of where the path that I went down, I ended up playing more sport and having more contact with them. Whereas obviously it's just depends on where your priorities are when you're younger as to where that camaraderie will come from, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think it probably doesn't help that my physical activity I tend to do is running as well, which is a very solitary activity as a general rule.
Unless you're in a relay team.
Yes. they don't do a relay marathon. That sounds horrific.
but the only competitor in that scenario is yourself and how far you can push yourself as well. You're not competing against another team of runners, are you? You are.
No, it's me versus myself. And I mean, the main reason, like, modern life is very busy, and running for me is an opportunity to get away from it all. No one can bother me. I mean, someone could physically accost me.
If I just tackled you, you would be bothered.
Yes, but that's what I mean. Like,
I'd be like, people, he's running. He must be trying to score.
But like, in general, when I'm out and about running, like, it's a chance to switch off from all of the, you know, so, you know, people always talking about logging off social media these days, all of that stuff. That is my time alone to myself. And I tend to listen to podcasts or music while doing it, but it is very different to the kind of always.
See, I do that with swimming because running is awful.
Well, yeah, I mean, but it's the same functional thing of being away from stuff. Obviously, with swimming, it's even harder to take electronics with you, so that's probably better from that point of view.
Just adds to the excitement.
Although swimming is a strange sport. It's pretty much the only sport where sometimes you do it for fun and sometimes you do it to not die.
Yeah.
But that has been... it's been a good discussion on sports. It's getting late. I do think it's time that we were wrapping up. I have to drive to St. Helens in the morning for work. And I need to cook my lunch in advance. So, thank you for joining us, everyone. It's been really good. It's been good to hear your views. It's been good to hear about other sports, except for cricket. hopefully Tom enjoys it when he goes to see you, so he can then bore me in your place.
I think actually Rob will have to come to me.
I don't have to listen to you talk about cricket. No, it's going to be good. You show him some cricket. I'll show him some people punching each other in the face, and we'll see which one he enjoys more.
Sounds fair.
And... that has been the Hat of Many Things sports ball. What's our next topic? Are we gonna?
We have to draw it from.
Are we gonna pull it from the hat? What hat have we got today? So, Dave, have you got a hat for us?
I do.
Dave, bring forth today?
There's nothing in the hat.
Yeah, no. What hat are you wearing? We'll pretend we're drawing from that hat.
It's a red Texas Rangers baseball cap.
Because you are a man of many hats.
I am.
You are. Rob, are you a man of many hats or are you a man of singular hats?
I'm a man of singular hats.
Which hat do you have?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. The one hat I actually own is an old East German communist hat, which I wear, which fits in very well to my cricket aesthetic, you know, the whole image I'm promoting this show.
Wonderful. So, Tom, what are you not drawing from Dave's red Texas hat?
I'm not drawing from Dave's red Texas hat. This is a topic we haven't actually covered yet, so that's interesting. We've drawn the history topic.
Ooh.
Yeah, so there's a good list here, actually, of things that we've put down. I don't remember putting half of these down, so I think mostly things Mike's interested in.
Probably not. I know nothing about history, man.
Well, maybe they've come from suggestions.
Maybe we have suggestions. It sounds unlikely, doesn't it? Do you have suggestions? If you're listening and you do have suggestions, please do suggest via Twitter or via our website. We would very much like to hear them. We'd very much like to hear your thoughts. If you still think I'm swearing too much, please tell me. I am very sorry. I'm aware that is the only comment we've ever received.
The subcategory withdrawn, which is definitely one I'm not super well versed in, so I hope Mike has some more knowledge, or maybe we can get someone who has.
Oh, I know historians.
The Three Kingdoms.
Oh, I like. Yes, no, I can get a guess for that. I like the Three Kingdoms, but I mostly like Three Kingdoms because I'm a massive nerd and played every Dynasty Warriors game.
That's my only real knowledge of the Three Kingdoms,
which is incredibly stylized. But I definitely have someone in mind for that podcast.
Perfect. So that's our. Our next topic. While we're here, do we have any plugs from our guests? I know that Rob is there on Unparliamentary Language and Me, which we've already mentioned, but what about you, Dave?
No, it's all right. That's okay. So at the minute, there's a couple of ways you can find me. I'm currently streaming on Twitch twice a week, under twitch.tv/DavilKlatson. I'm sure there'll be a way to type that out instead of misspelling it. Or you can find the same on Twitter as well. Also, if you fancy listening to some music, it's not been updated for a while. However, it will be doing very soon. If you follow Dave Booker on Spotify, you'll find a collection of random recordings of me maybe swearing during songs.
He's generally a good musical performer, as well as a good guest. I've been to his concerts. He does perform occasionally. If you're in the Northwest area, please do check him out. Dave is a great artist and performer, and I highly recommend going to see his shows.
And I one more, I feel like I'm plugging myself a lot here.
You just plug away. You go full plumber.
If you also look as well, an upcoming band that I'm playing bass in, which has been an interesting few months, a band called Rebel Rivers, which you can find on Facebook. We're starting to get around Manchester and go to a few open mics. All original material as well. So come on down and tell us how terrible we are at our jobs.
I'll make sure to drop some links to that in the show notes.
Can we throw peanuts at you?
You can do. If I eat them, then you get a bonus point.
Sick.
Because points always mean prizes, right?
Points do mean prizes. if you want to check out our show notes, you can go to hatofmanythings.com. You can find us on Facebook as Hat of Many Things. You can find us on Twitter at Hat of Many Things. And you can find us on Reddit /r/ Hat of Many Things. And if you want to support all of our shows here or any of our shows individually, you can go to patreon.com/TTSS. That was a lot of fun.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Is Craig like a little otter or whatever it is?
I think it's supposed to be like a bear. I'm not sure. I honestly have no idea. They give you the emoji when you go to the website to download Craig.
Yeah. And do you have a choice or is it just always that one?
You can set anything to be Craig, but I used that because it was the one that was default.
We've lost Gyark.
We lost Gyark. That's true.
There's a reason we call it third base, lads. That did not take long.
I'm impressed that we've managed to derail this at the very start of the conversation.
I am not. I think we're finally up to par.